Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What is happening, gang? We are jacked about this special episode of the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Pulling. In today's episode, we're going to take a look back at one of our first episodes on the pod, the decision Bill had to make between Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf at the head of the draft. This is one of the most important decisions in NFL history. It was truly, truly a complex time. So what we wanted to do was highlight some of the moments from that episode to harken back to some of the important factors that went into this decision. Obviously, we just got through a really, really fun 2022 NFL draft, and we'll be back here in a couple weeks to dive deeper into the draft. But in the meantime, we wanted to take a minute and talk about this draft in particular and what went into all of the decisions in Bill's mind in terms of, was Peyton a safer bet? Did Ryan Leaf have higher potential upside in terms of what he might become as a player? This is truly a unique look into one of the most complex decisions in the NFL. It's also kind of fun to get a vibe from Bill in terms of how the decision-making process was. And we'll look back at this segment of the episode in terms of what really went into the decision. Was it mainly about the character issues? Was it mainly about the football? How much did some of the measurables weigh into it? It's a unique window into one of the things that I've always wanted to know in terms of how do you truly evaluate drafting a quarterback at the top of the NFL draft. But before we dive into today's show, I want to take a minute and talk about one of our favorite sponsors on the pod, BetOnline. BetOnline is one of our favorite platforms. Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, including updated odds on the NBA and NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball, fights, and even next season NFL futures. And don't forget, this weekend, as the Run to the Roses is on at the Kentucky Derby, BetOnline is your continued source for all your favorite sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's super easy to get started, so head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, promo code BELIEVE, one more time, BLEAV, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, it is where the game starts. All right, gang, this is our revisit of one of the most consequential decisions in the NFL. This is our look at Peyton Manning versus Ryan Leaf. At this, like, even from kind of like a standpoint, it really just came down to you guys deciding, hey, we need a quarterback, this is the direction we're going to go, and then it disseminates into which one do we want.
Well, that's the final piece in the puzzle. After you've gone through all of this, all of the psychological testing, all of the medical testing, all of the measurable testing, height, weight, speed, etc., and all of the measurement of how a player plays on the field, which makes up the scouting report, which, by the way, is about a computerized, you know, four pages when it's all said and done. And we read from that.
Right.
Then the first thing you do is put them in the appropriate rounds, right? Let's talk first round only. You put them in a round, and then the next thing you do is grade them within the round. We're right at the end now. The management group has gotten together.
Right.
And now we're going to grade them in the round. So you've got a quarterback, you've got a pass rusher, you've got a running back, you've got a wide receiver, you've got a couple of tackles. So the first thing you do is grade them as players. So within the first round, it would, you know, player, the offensive tackle could be player one.
Right.
We actually stacked them within the round so you could see where they ranked. The board was very visual for a couple of reasons. One, it's easier to operate on game day, on draft day that way, which is game day for the personnel right. department. And secondly, when Jim or other people who had reason to see the board came in, they could understand very quickly what was going on. And Jim could understand on draft day exactly what was going on because he could see it right in front of him.
Right. This is the decision-making process. This is why we're doing what we're doing. This is all the stuff that
This is how we're not going to trade that pick in the first round that we have a first round grade on for a fifth and a sixth. I don't care what the chart says. Look at the board. Now, also, we're getting really deep in the weeds here. So if I'm not making myself clear, stop me, please.
We will. Rick will slam his fist into the table, dictator style.
In any given first round, and the television guys are just beginning to realize this, you don't have 32 first round grades. God didn't make that many.
Maybe you have 24.
No.
12.
The average is 20.
Okay.
The average is 18. The average is 18. Now, 32 teams with 18 first round grades, they're going to be different players.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, you might end up, we think mathematically, and we did all this after the, we did all these studies after the draft to make sure that our system worked. We think mathematically that you can, at 24 or 25, you might look into a guy that you had first on the board, particularly if you run an offensive or defensive system that's kind of unique.
Right.
But after that, they're truly second rounders, which is why you see Bill Belichick, whose system is somewhat similar to ours because Dominelli worked with him in Cleveland, why you see him trade down a lot. Because his reason is not because he wants to accrue picks. It's because he realizes that he's going to get the same player at 36 that he's getting at 26, and he can pick up a third to do it.
And getting value.
And getting value, mm-hmm. yeah. So
when you're making a decision like that, that is sort of from a general qualitative standpoint in terms of this is the kind of guy you could get. Are there sort of anticipatory concepts or reckonings in terms of if I do this here, there is a guy down there I really want, but they're more likely to take him? Or is there a chess match in terms of trying to anticipate what other people do once you get into that point where it's a bit more fungible?
Well, I guess to follow on to that just a little mm-hmm. bit, mm-hmm. specifically to this draft, you had you guys were quarterback hungry. You had Arizona who didn't need a quarterback. San Diego probably needed a quarterback. And then it was sort of a smorgasbord after it. How does that impact, just specific even to this one, of sort of the complexity of when two doesn't need a quarterback and everybody values the quarterback so highly, how does that throw off the trade algorithm from a draft perspective in that sense?
Mm-hmm.
Well, quarterbacks change the whole picture. They're different. They're anomalous. So let's talk about quarterbacks to begin with. First of all, if you have a quarterback and you're in position to draft him, meaning you're probably one, two, or three in a given draft in these days, go get him. Don't hesitate.
Just no matter what happens.
Somebody's coming up to get him. No matter, pull the trigger.
Right.
If you are at 18 or 19 or 22 or wherever Andy was in the Mahomes draft, then you have to put together the ammunition to get up to where you think he might go. And that takes a lot of doing in terms of creating the ammunition and then doing the work before the draft to lay the groundwork for the trades. And then you don't make the trade until the player's on the clock because you don't want to give up all that ammunition if he's gone to somebody else. And that happens fairly frequently. You can have a trade all but made And then bingo, the guy goes right in front of you.
And now you got a mess.
It's not a mess. You just go back to square one. You know who you're going
to
take.
Board and you just follow
exactly. Our mantra, we had a number of mantras, which the guys that work for us now repeat. And it's kind of fun to hear them repeat it. Let the board speak to you. Mm-hmm. Let the board speak to you. It'll tell you who to take. If you've done all the work, it'll tell you who to take. But with a quarterback, that's different. You got to go get them because they're valued so highly that they're going to be drafted well above where they should have been. You know, RG3 should never have been drafted where he was if you just compared him as a player to somebody else. But the position itself carries a premium.
So it's too valuable.
It's too valuable. You go pay it.
So at any point in the process, did anybody call you about trying to get to one in that draft?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Carolina called, and actually the ironic thing was Dom was doing the calling. He was at Carolina at the time, Dom Anili. And they offered Kerry Collins and half the team for the rights to Peyton. And it was tempting. It was tempting.
Like, how much did you think about it?
I thought about it a fair amount. Mm-hmm. I thought about it a fair amount. And Dom, to his credit, did his job. He didn't editorialize. He just said, here's the deal. And in fact, I said to him, what do you think about it? He said, I can't talk about it. You know, which was right. He was absolutely right. After the fact, when he got with us, he said, I would have killed you if you made the deal.
Yeah, that would have been. Well, because where was that in proximity? Because obviously San Diego moves up to 2.
Yeah, that's probably in
about 5 weeks
early
out.
April, yeah. Okay. So they were very aggressive. There are a couple other people. San Diego wanted to swap.
Do you think they wanted to swap to get Leaf?
Or no, they wanted to pay. Yeah. Yeah, Bobby told me after the fact they wanted Peyton.
Right.
What happened, you know, in the lead up, because we were talking about this a lot at the time, you know, Peyton was sort of the front runner for a long time. And then at some point, whether it was just the press or whomever, there was sort of this acceleration of Ryan Leaf to, well, maybe he's really the guy. What was the genesis of that? And did you ever take that seriously?
Well, first of all, I don't pay any attention to And I strive not to pay attention to noise prior to my doing the film work. So I couldn't have told you who the front runner was, prior to my sitting down and looking at the tape. But as soon as we had our first scouting meeting in Indianapolis, it was clear that there was a 50-50 dichotomy on the scouting staff. 50% had Manning number one, 50% had Leaf number one. The irony was that the 50% who liked Manning didn't dislike Leaf necessarily. They thought Manning was better. They saw some warts on Leaf, but not many. The guys who disliked Manning kind of disliked him intensely. And I think that mirrored what was going on in the media. Now, there was so much noise once we got to Indianapolis and prepared for the draft that you couldn't avoid it.
Before we continue diving deeper into this consequential decision in the NFL draft of Peyton Manning versus Ryan Leaf, we want to talk about one of our favorite sponsors on the pod. That's Dynasty Owner. Do you love fantasy sports? Are you looking for a new challenge this year? Dynasty Owner is the new way to play fantasy football with real-life NFL salaries, adding the strategy of running an actual franchise. This is a really amazing, unique thing because it's super easy in fantasy to be able to go out and just draft everybody that you possibly want and sort of annihilate your friends with your football knowledge. This sort of eliminates it in the sense of you've really got to participate in the same way NFL GMs do in terms of adhering to the cap. Dynasty Owner provides a unique and challenging experience that will test your skills as an owner and general manager. You will have complete control over your team's future. And the nice part about it, you got to think years in advance. How important rookies are, all of those components really factor into Dynasty Owner. You can build through the draft, make trades, sign free agents, and manage your team's salary cap. Can you create the Dynasty of Champions? Sign up now at dynastyowner.com and get started on building your dynasty.
I mean, you could try as you might to block it out. It was in the ether.
The ship has sailed.
Exactly.
We're now pregnant.
I mean, you're walking down the hall from getting a pop at the soda machine, and somebody in the bookkeeping department says, who do you like better?
Right, yeah.
It was that kind of thing.
But yeah. So had you done any quarterback evaluation in Carolina prior
yeah,
to coming?
Yeah, I had, yeah.
So did you have a sense kind of going into
Yeah, I saw Peyton play three times because they had a tight end that the previous year, because they had a tight end that we drafted and who played well for us for about 7 or 8 years at Tennessee. I'm sorry. I saw him play against Mississippi twice because the tight end was at Mississippi. And I had seen him live twice his senior year, including when he beat Kentucky. I came from behind to beat Kentucky there and famously led the band in Rocky Top after the game.
Right.
So I knew a lot about him. Didn't know as much about Ryan. I'd seen Ryan play, I believe, once, maybe twice. So I had more work to do on Ryan, but with this 50-50 split on the scouting staff, what I said was, okay, tell you what, I'm going to go back to square one. You guys go back to doing what you do, getting ready for the rest of the draft, which I will implicitly trust you with. And I'm going to go back and look at every pass both of those guys threw throughout their college careers. Now in those days, we didn't have cut-ups the way
it
we do now.
Really easy. Yeah.
It was not easy.
That was a process. It wasn't the 15-second.
And I went to our video guy and said, I need every pass Peyton Manning threw and every pass.
What did his face look like?
His eyes got wide. Yeah. He said, you mean this year? I said, no, in their entire careers. Oh, he said, I don't know if I can do that. I said, well, you got to.
Yeah.
So he did it, to his credit. Yeah. He did. And I went back and looked at it all. I had Tom Moore look at it all, who was our offensive coordinator. I'm sure Jim Mora looked at it all. Now, Jim knew Peyton really well because
–
The New Orleans connection.
Right.
Yeah, he knew Archie well. Mm-hmm. He knew Peyton well. I think he'd seen Peyton play in high school, if I'm not mistaken. And so Jim was – I mean, he was trying very hard to be objective, but it was harder for him than it might have been for me because I didn't have any real connection to Peyton.
Right.
You know, the eye in the sky doesn't lie. So you see every throw. You can judge. The one thing you can't really judge is arm strength, at least for me. I think it's my failing. I've been around evaluators who can. And I'm getting better at it as time goes by, but I was not real good at it then. I had to see it live.
What do they look for in watching on TV? On tape.
You're looking for processing. How quick does he get the ball out of his hands? How accurate is he? How well does he read defenses? How well does he react to pressure? If the play has to be extended, how well does he do it? Does he panic? Does he take sacks? How does he read defenses and what does he go through progressions? But that really, when it's all boiled down, what you're looking for is processing speed, poise, speed of delivery, and accuracy. Arm strength is not terribly dispositive.
Okay.
It's, you can have an average arm, which Peyton did, and be fine.
Right.
But you can't have a weak arm. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a weak arm, that limits what you can do. Ironically enough, after I finished that process, and after Bruce Ahrens and Tom Moore had finished the process, we all were trending pretty heavily toward Peyton. Although it wasn't, in my mind, I was going to try and play the devil's advocate. I was going to make sure that we turned over every stone. So I said to Jim Irsay, would you mind if I asked Bill Walsh to take a look at the tape? He said, no, not at all. So I called Bill, who was then out of football, I think. And or he may have been Stanford. I can't remember which, but I think he was out at the moment. And I said, you know, would you mind looking at the film for us? He said, no, not at all. So we sent him the tape, and he went through it, and he came back unequivocally, Peyton, between the two. Now, I think he was later quoted as saying that he might have taken Brian Greasy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether he said that tongue-in-cheek or because it was a better fit for his offense. But he was clearly, to him, he gave us a very thorough report, and Peyton clearly was the guy.
Well, I think Peter King had done something where he had actually gotten in touch with six general managers or sort of thought leaders in the NFL and sort of pieced it together. And I think out of that Peter King article, that's when Bill Walsh said that Greasy probably was a better fit. Maybe you get more assets trading down.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And, right.
Yeah, I think
right.
what he was thinking was you could trade down from one, maybe get Charles Woodson, get a second, maybe get the third that you replaced. But you didn't have that luxury because you didn't have a third round pick. And
that's
Greasy
correct.
Probably was going to be gone.
Yeah.
So
were there things as you went down that sort of the Ben Franklin balance sheet there and the pros and the cons? Was there conflict in that Ryan was better at certain things and Peyton was better, but Peyton had more good things, or the things that he wasn't as good at, he was less bad at than Ryan? Or what was the calculus?
Well, don't forget that the process from 30,000 feet it involves three things. One is the physical: how does the guy actually play the game? The next is the emotional and psychological. And then the third is the physical, the medical part of it. There are three parts.
Right.
There were no medical problems with either guy. But as the process went on, clearly, Peyton, from the psychological, emotional perspective, intelligence perspective, was separated himself pretty widely. And all of us in the building, without hesitation, all agreed that for a quarterback to succeed, you can get by with less than great physical skills, but you can't succeed for 1 minute without great emotional intelligence, poise, the so-called intangibles.
Right.
And that's where the spread began and only grew over time.
Do you think a lot of the fervor was sort of the spookiness of, you know, Peyton never got past Florida? That game against Nebraska in the Orange Bowl did not go particularly well in Tom Osborne's last game. And then Leaf, who didn't have, I guess this is a two-parter in the sense that I think from a fan's perspective, Peyton definitely had the better supporting cast, probably on offense with Peerless Price, Marcus Nash, a freshman, and Jamal Lewis. Ryan Leaf had the five receivers, but not high-level talent. And then you get to kind of the bowl games and, you know, have that clock not stopped early, and they get the snap off at the end of the Rose Bowl. You know, he's maybe within a play of beating Michigan and then potentially, you know, fouling up the whole national championship that year.
Well, he had a good Rose Bowl game, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
How many of those receivers that Peyton had went on to good careers in the National Football League? The answer is zero. You know, Peyton made the receivers, not the other way around. Tom Moore, who's the greatest football philosopher I've ever come across, said fairly recently when asked about a coach who had been around Peyton, he said, Peyton made a lot of guys good coaches.
Made a lot of receivers good, a lot of coaches good.
These were the things that were out there that to this day I still can't figure out. So there was – and this, these are all from non-football people. This was all in the media. Number one, he couldn't win the big one. How the hell many games did he win?
A ton. Right.
Right? Secondly –
and not a lot of teams beat those Florida teams.
Yeah, that's correct.
Those Spurrier Florida teams were pretty good.
Yeah. Secondly, he's a product of the system. To this day, I still haven't figured it out. You know, T. Martin had a great year the following year, but, you know, is it the system? No.
Well, because they didn't exactly play like they did
That's
in
98. Exactly right.
They played in 97.
That's exactly
with some
right.
Of T's athleticism.
He made the system, for goodness sake.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you watch tape, you could see that. It was clear. That's where I got, as the process narrowed down, I got a little annoyed because all the noise that we were hearing was clear that the people hadn't watched the tape. They were simply regurgitating what others were telling them. So that was a small pain in the neck. But again, brushed it aside, tried not to deal with it, and told the scouts and the coaches don't deal with it. But in truth, the physical part of it did not separate until we went to the workouts, which were, as it turned out, were back-to-back, I believe, or a day apart. We went to Knoxville. Jim got us a private plane. We went to Knoxville, took the whole crew. Peyton worked out. I think he had Nash with him, if I'm not mistaken, among some others. And the first thing that struck me when he worked out was that he had threw such a heavy ball. I mean, he had a good arm. There was a lot of revolutions on that ball, much more so than I'd seen on film, which I told you. I don't,
you
got to
see that live.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm not a good judge of that.
Even with 4K, I don't think that's happening on TV.
So that was somewhat surprising to me and certainly a positive. So that put that to rest. There's some funny stories that surround that too, which I'll get to in a second. But then we went out to work to watch Ryan work out. And I remember standing next to Tom and saying, and Peyton did everything we asked him to do. Tom conducted the workout.
Yeah. So how does that workout work? Mm-hmm. So you get there. How much control does the player have? How much control does, you know?
Well, we would like the player to have zero control. Okay. Mm-hmm. We want it. It's called a private workout. Philip Fulmer agreed to it completely. As I recall, he didn't even come to the workout. We went and talked to him afterwards.
So do you deal with the coach or the agent to book that? How does
that
work?
Yeah, the agent.
Okay.
And so Peyton provided the receivers, and Tom conducted the workout, and Bruce. So he threw every route we wanted him to throw. He interpreted what they were telling him. They were actually coaching him up, telling him what the routes ought to be. Tom has a drill where he can measure arm strength, where you stand in one spot and you don't move your feet. You just throw the ball with your arm, and he keeps moving the receiver back. And Peyton made every throw. And then when we got to Washington State, the agent and Coach Price had decided that they were going to run the workout. We were just spectators.
Okay.
Which was, it's not ideal, but
how often does that happen?
Nowadays, quite a bit. Now, because of the advent of televised pro days, it's all orchestrated by the agent, and it's not worth a darn.
But that kills you guys from an evaluation.
It does. It does. As time went on, and the agents and the coaches, because of recruiting, orchestrated the pro days even more, I wouldn't even go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We wouldn't send anybody from the executive staff. We just – the area scout would go to get the numbers. And that's all.
Do you think that's the trend that's going to happen now with the combine, with like the Rams and the Broncos not sending scouts
yes.
to the combine this year?
The television show has made it.
Has wrecked.
Why do we go?
So yeah. What are you going to do?
Like, watch the tape.
Yeah.
Watch the television show.
Right.
Get mm-hmm. the numbers.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all it's good for. Can we digress a little?
Sure.
The combine, because here's the combine was formed many, many years ago. Because there were two scouting combines, combinations of teams who shared information. BLESTO, which stood for Bears, Lions, Eagles, Steelers, talent organization. The Vikings came and became known as BLESTO V. And CEPO, Central Eastern Personnel Organization, which had among its members the Giants, the Redskins, the Cowboys, et cetera. Those organizations had what was called open disclosure. So each club would hire a scout, put him into the organization. The organization was run by a personnel director, the combine, and then they in turn would provide you scouting data. It was designed to cut scouting costs. As that process grew, it was thought, after consultation with the college coaches, that we should do all of the workouts under one roof if possible. The coaches did not want them missing class. Those were in the days where most guys still had a semester to go after the bowl games, right. And graduation rates were becoming an issue.
Yeah.
So the coaches said, we don't want them leaving campus to go work out 32 different places.
And these guys also needed to get jobs.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
That was that part of it.
So we said, okay, the combine directors – said Jack Butler for BLESTO, and I think it was Dick Mansberger for CEPO, if I'm not mistaken, and I could be on that. But they said, okay, we'll do an individual combine. CEPO did theirs, if I'm correct, in Seattle, and BLESTO did theirs in Detroit. And then after a couple of years, the personnel people got together. This was well below the level of general managers. This was the hardcore personnel people got together and said, why are we doing this, you know, in two separate places? Let's make the coaches even happier. Mm-hmm. We'll do it over 4 days in one place.
Centralize it.
Everybody mm-hmm. will come. And so because the two scouting combines were the driving force, the generators of this, it became known in the business as the combine.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And so the media picked up on it without ever knowing what the mm-hmm. derivation of the word meant.
Right. Yeah.
So the fact of the matter is that what we see today is an outgrowth of that, but like everything else, it's grown like Topsy and devoured itself.
So I remember, you know, in the old days when SIBO would become national, right?
Yep.
You would get the small computer printout and then the accordion computer printout on every guy of every single right. thing that ever happened to him. But they still were still trying to outdo one another somewhat. I mean, there's still a bit of a competition, it seemed, as to who had the better information. It wasn't, they didn't share everything, it seemed to me.
Oh, no, the two yeah. competing combines didn't
right.
share anything.
It was just so, but you're
except
right.
the data at
exactly.
the combine
and,
itself.
And that was where, in the common parlance, people didn't understand the difference between sort of the physical entity of a combine and the intellectual idea of two information gathering organizations.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'm going to save.
Well,
this
let
for
me backtrack
yeah.
and
yeah,
so finish
then,
the.
Well, here, since we're on it.
Yeah.
So then going into the combine this year or going into the combine in 98, what were you looking for? Did Manning and Leaf both throw at that combine? Were you able to
neither
get out of that
neither
go?
Threw. But let me okay. let me go back and give you just the final piece
yeah,
in the combine workout, what we now know as the combine. It was George Young famously said this, and he was 1,000% right. If all we got out of the combine were the medicals, that would be enough. And that, in effect, is why it was formed.
Right.
To make sure that we got thorough and complete medical examinations on every player. And to this day, no player has ever had a medical examination at any school or college he's ever been at that's as comprehensive or as thorough or as accurate as that which he gets at the combine. And every year, many of which the public never hears about, we discover players with congenital conditions, with chronic conditions that make playing football for them dangerous.
Right.
And so that serves its purpose. And George often said, if that's all we got, it's well worth it.
So, who brings in the medical staff for it? Where does that come
from? Every team mm-hmm. brings
so you
in
bring
their
in your own medical staff.
Yep.
But and then you guys don't share any of that info, do you?
Yes, it's shared.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So all of that shared.
Yeah. So San Diego's doctor may look at knees. Indianapolis's doctor may look at shoulders.
Okay.
And
sort of
all,
assembly line kind of.
And, right. And, you just kind of go down the
yeah,
line.
And all the information is shared. And then because of the. We actually built Lucas Oil Stadium with the combine in mind. So there's a big below, beneath the house, behind the house area, which actually accommodates MRI machines and things like that. So unless they need some really sophisticated test, it's all done inside the building in Indianapolis.
So the net is if you're going to get hurt, Indianapolis is the place to get hurt.
No
game,
question
you,
about
you
it.
You get an MRI in the stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So – the medical part is the driving force behind mm-hmm. it. Then the next most important thing are the measurables. Because even though an area scout does a great job, oftentimes you won't have the ability to measure a guy on campus. You certainly can't run him during the season. The pro day might not be his best day. So you want height, weight, speed, and you want timing on certain drills. Each team values certain drills more highly than others by position, but that's okay. It's the measurables that are the next most important thing. So medical, measurables. Now mental becomes the next. The M is simply an alliterative way of saying it. It's psychological, mental. Those are the so-called 20-minute meetings, which in many ways are a joke. But because no psychologist can tell you in 20 minutes right. what a guy is.
If they could, it would be a very different field.
It would be a different yeah. world, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So but those are the three most important things. The on-field drills are meaningless.
Okay.
in my view, meaningless.
So none of, you don't really, any of those.
If we missed them all tomorrow, it would make a, would make a damn bit of difference.
It's crazy.
I never, in 35 years in this business, I have never seen a player upgraded or downgraded based on his combine tape.
Okay. Do you think other GMs have?
Not many.
Okay.
Not
they
many.
They haven't lasted long.
But it's good for the TV show now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. It's a really good TV show. It's like the Olympics.
Yeah, yeah. And one other thing I wanted to mention.
Bill Cowher called it the underwear Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hey, one thing as a sort of a player's guy for a lot of my career that I thought was great was that when you talked about those medical conditions, many of them were undiscovered by the players themselves.
Correct.
And so, I mean, you save people's physicality, lives, their lives,
yeah,
in doing things. So it's not sort of this crass meat market kind of thing. I mean, it really had a real life value for these people.
Oh yeah, you mean you hear a story in the media almost every, Montez Sweat last year with the hearts. I mean, there's almost a player every year, at least from a media public perspective, fan perspective, that comes out every
year. And there's some that it doesn't come out, and but they've been told. Yeah.
Back to the combine now with Ryan and Peyton.
Yeah.
So we're now in roughly the 1st of March. And so we've done a lot of work. And they're beginning to separate themselves, but the meeting itself is going to be pretty important.
So do you have a lean going into the combine?
Probably, in my mind, lean Peyton, but I was trying hard to remain neutral. So Ryan is scheduled to go first because it's done alphabetically. So we show up. We come to our room. We tell him and his agent, you know, where he's supposed to be. Let's call it 7 o'clock, which is when they begin. No Ryan Leaf. 7:05, no Ryan Leaf. 7:10, no Ryan Leaf. 7:20, the horn blows, beep, no Ryan Leaf. So we're thinking to ourselves, what the heck happened?
Well, and to paint a picture, you guys are just in an empty hotel room, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so there can't be anything weirder in the world than a bunch of football guys. Empty hotel room, guy doesn't show up.
With an empty chair.
Right? Yeah.
It was like Ronald Reagan in the empty chair.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood. You just needed Clint Eastwood there.
Yeah, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What's gonna happen?
So I immediately start reaching out to people trying to find. I get no answer from Lee Steinberg, his agent, and I get a call from one of the beat reporters in Indianapolis who said, Ryan Leaf missed his meeting, correct? I said, yes, that's correct. And he said, well, Lee Steinberg has said that you didn't tell him what time the meeting was supposed to be.
Because there's a consistent pattern of that happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the better angels of my nature zipped my lip, and I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't respond to that except to say that's not true, but left it at that.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I had a conversation with Mr. Steinberg the rest of the way through the process. It wouldn't have been a good one had we done it. But then he came out in the paper the next day and said, Bill Polian didn't give us the right information, and it's his fault, and so on. So, okay.
Yeah, that's probably on the flag list if you're doing the whiteboard.
The lights are beginning to flash now.
That's probably
orange.
Red light special at the NFL Combine.
Exactly.
Not taking this one.
You're yellow now. Yeah. Then you're headed for red.
Yeah, we're not far off. Going and kind of looking at Leaf and Manning, when did you make that final decision, like leading up to the draft, that you were going to go with Peyton?
I think the final decision was probably, on the flight back from Ryan's workout, I think I said to Jim Mora, unless we find out something that changes the picture dramatically, everything we believe in tells us Peyton. And he said, yes, that's right. And then we went through the rest of the process where we got all the rest of the information in. And as I said, the gap widened when the so-called intangibles came into play, particularly maturity on Ryan's part. And not that he was a bad guy, but you know, there was just a difference between the two. Peyton was far more ready to take the job and embrace the job and handle the job. And so I'm guessing maybe 10 days or so before the draft, I went into Jim and said, it's Peyton. And Jim being Jim said, it's the decision I would have made too.
In total alternate universe time, let's say something had come up on Peyton that had a medical something. Do you think you would have taken Ryan Leaf at one?
Boy, that's a good question. Probably not. Probably not.
Would you go on Woodson, you think?
Maybe. Maybe. There were enough questions with Ryan to think. I don't know if we'd have gone that high. We probably looked to trade out, I think.
Right. And then Kerry would have been the quarterback in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
The world would be a very different place.
Yeah, that's probably right. Probably right.
No, I was just going to say, it's interesting that over the course of this, whether it's Tony or Kerry or Ryan, there's a lot of nice, really redemption stories around the league where guys encounter problems early on, but do turn their lives around and become big contributors.
Yeah. I ran into Ryan about a year and a half or maybe 2 years ago, and I can't recall where, but I didn't recognize him because I think he had beard at the time.
Yeah,
and he came up and said hello, and I said to him at the time, I said, I'm really glad that after all you've been through, things have worked out for you. Keep doing it. And keep telling your story, because it's a great story of redemption, and I couldn't wish you anything but the best. And I sincerely meant it. I mean it now. He's a really good guy who went through a lot, and his story is really instructive for young people. They can learn a lot from.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.